The Frequency 49 show is brought to you by the Niner Empire GB.
Welcome to the Frequency 49 show. I'm your host, Simon Holdsworth, and joining me this week are my PIC, Deepak Gohil, and the dude from Deutschland, Michael Wandy. Good evening, guys.
Evening, guys. I love it. The dude from Deutschland. Wonderful.
Guten Abend from Deutschland.
So, week 12 and Thursday night saw the Niners travel to divisional rivals Seattle Seahawks on Thanksgiving Day primetime in a battle atop the AFC West. Once again, the 49ers dominated on both sides of the ball to come out with a 31-13 victory to move to 8-3 on the season. Guys, we love eating turkey in Seattle, don't we?
I'm a vegetarian and I'll eat turkey in Seattle, mate.
That was awesome, wasn't it? Domination again.
Except for the third quarter, it was.
Yeah, thank you, Michael. Yeah, that was my feeling as well, but Shani just still insisted on keeping it close. We fell apart in the third quarter, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, we're only ahead with a narrow lead at that point.
Yeah, I think, but it was 24-13, wasn't it, at that stage, I think?
Yeah.
11 points.
Yeah, but Brock Purdy threw more touchdown passes in Seattle than to Seattle than Geno Smith.
This is very true. I mean, let's have a look at the stats then. So Brock Purdy, 21 of 30, 209 yards, one touchdown, and that one interception, which obviously was tipped twice for a pick six. So do we give him a bit of a break on that one?
For me, definitely. All the great quarterbacks throw interceptions. Montana did, Brady did, they all of them throw interceptions. It doesn't define their careers, unlike Roger Craig's. Perhaps we could get into that a little bit later on, his exclusion from the Hall of Fame. But yeah, I wouldn't hold that against Purdy. He's been wonderful for us this season.
Yeah, I see it the same. I heard people in several game threads writing, why didn't they run the ball? Yeah, if they run the ball and get stopped there, that could end in safety. So I can see why they threw the ball, and yes, it was tipped. And I'm always amazed by defense liners jumping that high. I mean, if I try to jump, I get maybe 2 centimeters or so, and some of those defense liners jump a half a meter or so up.
Yeah,
they're athletes, aren't they? I mean, look, with Brock Purdy, I think we've become so accustomed to him being almost perfect and not throwing any picks at all. It's when he throws one, it's kind of like, oh, what the hell was that? You know, he's having a massive downturn. But also, it's his first full season as well, man. I mean, if he's barely thrown an interception all year, apart from that 3-game skid when I felt that he was kind of forcing things to try and put the team on his back. But, you know, a tip ball can go anywhere, and for Seattle, it went into the things. Let's not forget later on in the game in the fourth quarter, he led us down the field and threaded that ball through 4 Seattle defenders to Brandon Ayuk for what was the game sealing score. So you know, you'd certainly take him than not have him at the moment, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know what though, Si, statistically, is he the best quarterback in the NFL at the moment? You know, how could you not want that? You know,
he ranks number one in all the tangibles, pretty much every single one.
Still he gets no love by the critics. There are enough critics who still say he is just a system quarterback, and sorry, I have to say it, but if you say that Joe Montana was a system quarterback, he had Jerry Rice, he had John Taylor, he had Roger Craig, Steve Young was a system quarterback, he had Jerry Rice and Terrell Owens, and Ricky Waters, and every quarterback is a system quarterback, and they only use it because in the last few years, those running QBs came out of their holes, and the people think quarterbacks have to play like them, have to to run the ball 15, 20 times a game and so on. And then you have outstanding players like Patrick Mahomes, who are generational talents, sorry. But look at Mahomes at the moment. A buddy of mine who is a Kansas City Chiefs fan who said the same. Look at what Mahomes plays this year without top wide receivers. He looks like he was a system quarterback as well. And
I think we mentioned this in the last recording. If Brock Purdy was drafted in one of the top five slots, they wouldn't be talking. They'd be talking about him in the same conversation as Mahomes and the rest of them.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be the afterthought that he is. And I think to some degree it works in our favor. If he's still being treated as the known unknown, power to us then, because we know what he is.
I agree.
Yeah,
I agree. You only have to look at the Patriots and Mac Jones for how a high draft pick quarterback can just fail. And he was supposed to be the perfect fit for our offense, wasn't he, according to
Vince Young. There are more than one example for first rounders who didn't work.
Look at Zach Wilson, look how he ended up. Fields, yeah. You know, yeah. Of that, and of course Trey Lance, of that group of quarterbacks, this greatest QB harvest since 1982 when Marino and that lot came into the league, only Trevor Lawrence has shown that he can play.
Yeah, I like the look of CJ Stroud. He looks a good player.
Yeah, yeah, he does.
But I mean, we look at that draft when we took Trey Lance at three. Was it number three?
Yep.
And we got Purdy in the same draft, I think it was. And for me, all we do is you just swap those names around, and we've got exactly who we drafted, pretty much.
Yeah.
just delving back into the stats, Christian McCaffrey was solid again. 114 yards on 19 carries, two touchdowns. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anyone since Barry Sanders who can accelerate through a gap like he does. It's just phenomenal how he looked. There were so many runs on Thursday night where there were Seahawks all around him. You're like, they've got him. They've absolutely got him here. He's going nowhere. And he just pokes his nose out through a gap and he's gone.
What is the CMC factor here? Because, you know, he's not the biggest guy, the biggest running back. He's not the fastest either, not by a long shot. So what does this guy have that makes him so phenomenal? You know,
I think it's his vision. His vision is unbelievable. And he's decisive as well.
There was that one play where I thought he was going to get stuffed in the backfield, and he was waiting for the hole to open, and when it did, bang!
Yeah.
He knew it was going to develop and open, and he took the risk in waiting. I'm like, damn, he's going to get stuffed. And no, he did not get stuffed. A bit like with Brock when we thought he was going to get sacked and he dished out the little shovel pass to George Kittle for a few yards. That's a Mahomes play. You know, Mahomes does that. Sex symbol, put him on money. You know, Brock does it. System quarterback.
I think it's his versatility. Whatever you ask him to do, he does it. If it is a run over the sides or through the middle, or if it is a pass, he does it, and that makes him so great. And not a lot of other running backs can do that.
And he's not afraid to chuck it deep. He's got an arm on him.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. What was also pleasing to see on Thursday night was kind of Deebo Samuel being more and more involved. He has been, by his sort of lofty standards, a little bit quiet. I know he was kind of coming back. He missed a few games, didn't he? And was coming back off an injury. But our offense looks still. It's the fifth dimension to our offense, isn't it? Having Deebo where he's fit enough to line up in the backfield. We saw that on the short range touchdown where he had, where McCaffrey was in motion, and for all the world, it looked like Deebo was the decoy, and he was going to have a shovel pass, and Deebo took it in, and there wasn't a Seahawk within a meter of him. You know, from a yard out, how often do you see that? Shannon's genius with that kind of talent. It's a dangerous combo.
The only downer on that game to me was what Michael said, the third quarter. I just thought we were going to collapse and melt. And the reason why I was so afraid of it is because of who's coming up next.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but if something stands in our way, it's the O-line. If something stands in our way to get over the hump, it's our O-line. Because, yeah, I'm more secure when Brock is behind the O-line than I was with Jimmy. But Brock has so many times he has to run out of the pocket, or he has to do such dangerous throws because the pocket collapses around him. I mean, one example is this one throw he had to Kittle, I think it was in the first quarter, where the O-line collapsed. He was almost sacked and he threw a short shuffle pass to Kittle about 3 meters in front of him.
Yeah.
And we have to address that. It's mostly the left side, the right side, but I don't think Trent is back at full strength because the last two games, the right side collapsed as fast as well.
I think, to be honest, in my opinion, I thought the O-line had been pretty good, particularly in the run. I think, is it John Feliciano who's come in, who we got from New York? I think he's been pretty stellar. Aaron Banks is coming back. Trent is coming back from an injury, and I think we're getting healthier in that department. But it was telling that Christian McCaffrey sort of paid special attention to the O-line, didn't he, in his interview after the game, saying that the O-line had been pretty decent. Obviously, that's the run game. The pass game, I agree, we can always get better, but we're nowhere near as leaky as we were certainly last season before. I think we've definitely improved.
I think I read it at X. Someone said it. Burford looks better in run offense. Burford is a really good run blocker, but Feliciano looked better in pass protection. And the problem is you can't exchange the O-line too much, but if we do that, the opponent know what we play.
Exactly, yeah. So he's coming in.
We need a player who can do both, who can look good at pass and at run protection.
Yeah. I mean, we're not missing Mike McGlinchey, are we?
No.
That's for sure. Speaking of linemen, let's turn to the other side of the ball and turn to the defensive side of the ball. A big night for them. 6 sacks on the night. Nick Bosa, I think you touched on it last time we recorded, Deepak, is over his do I want to sign a contract blues and not turning up for pre-season. He seems to be back to his best. Javon Hargrave is getting better and better every week. And his inside knowledge could prove very, very useful in the upcoming game. But in the 3 games since we traded for Chase Young, we have 15 sacks. We have 33 on the season. So we've only had 18 in the previous 8 games.
Now 33.
In that game. Yeah, now 33.
It is the difference that makes the difference, I think. You know, I mean, you got to look at it the other way. Just put his ludicrous talent to one side. If you're an offensive coordinator, if you've got Bosa on one end and Chase Young on the other, and everybody in between, you're demoralized, aren't you? You're thinking, how the hell am I going to beat that? You know,
I just can't remember a defensive front four, as long as I can remember, for any team. And I'm even talking, you know, 2001 Ravens, I'm talking, that had a front four where they were all Pro Bowl standard. Both edge rushers and both interior linemen that were both Pro Bowl standard. It's frightening, really.
I think Deepak said it very well. Before Young came, everyone was concentrated on Bosa because they knew he was our best player, and they concentrated on him. And then we didn't have a good defensive end beside him.
Yeah.
Pharrell and Randy Gregory are okay, but they are not at the level Bosa and Young have. And now they don't know from where the sack comes. Is it from Bosa because two men cover Young, or is it two men covering Bosa? And that frees the lanes for Armstead and now I don't remember the name.
Hargraves
too. And for Pharrell, he looked really good since Young is there, because he gives Young and Bosa the seconds to get breathers outside, and that's what was missing before. Bosa, before Young came, Bosa played every snap for the first time he was with us.
Yeah.
I think what's telling is that when I've just been collating those stats and looking at how many sacks we have in the last three games, is the amount of half sacks. And that just shows that it's not just one person getting to the quarterback. It's twos and threes. So the entire pocket is collapsing. They can't block everybody. And invariably, they're not blocking anybody because they're all kind of getting there. And then, you know, I must admit, the defense has looked a lot better since Steve Wilks came down to the sideline. And I just wanted to make a special point of picking out Ambry Thomas. Who seems to have come in from the cold a little bit. He had a few issues, and his form had dipped. And then they've moved Dom Dolanoy into the nickel, and left Ambry Thomas out and brought him in at corner. And he's made two really big plays in the last two games. Obviously, he had the forced fumble and the fumble recovery against the Jags, which should have been returned for a touchdown, but obviously everyone got excited and walked on the field. And then they, you know, jumping the route for the interception on Thursday night was a real tone setter. And I think that it enabled us to move Charvarius Ward around and keep him with DK Metcalf, and he did a really, really stellar job of keeping DK Metcalf. But, you know, if both our corners are playing really, really well, the linebackers speak for themselves. With that defensive line, and we've got good safeties. J.A. Brown coming in for Talanoa Hufanga has been outstanding. It's tough to find a weak spot on that defense.
Not really only is. That, I think you see it for Ward. Since Ambry Thomas plays so good, the offenses don't concentrate on Ward so much. And it makes the game easier for Ward as well, because now we have two good cornerbacks. And Ward played slide out against DJ Metcalf. I think the greatest weakness we now have is on safety. Jair Brown plays well, but he still is a rookie. He will make mistakes at one point. And we only have two safeties left. If one of them gets injured, we have a problem. We have a huge problem after Odom got injured too.
Yeah, we've signed one to the practice squad, haven't we, I think? Since Hufanga got injured. Eric, somebody or other, I can't remember his name, but we've signed him to the practice squad.
Also, as I see, Oliver said, if necessary, he goes on safety. I don't know if I want to see him on the field, but he can make less damage as safety as he can as cornerback.
Let's hope he plays safety better than nickel.
Because
he was all right in the run game, but in coverage he was appalling, and it didn't take it took offenses 5 minutes to work that out.
But I'm glad we gave Charvarius Ward a mention. He was stellar.
Well, he was the guy who was originally picked to go over to the turkey table, wasn't he? And it was him and. Who was the other guy? And Christian McCaffrey. And I don't know if you've seen it, but there's a brilliant video because George Kittle was mic'd up, and it was him and Fred Warner walking off, and they kind of go, "Ooh, turkey. Should we go over there?" And Fred Warner's like, "Yeah, why not?" He goes, "We can't, can we?" "Yeah, we can." And then they just all went over, and it was really cool because, you know, the sight of Richard Sherman, I mean, Uncle Sherman, we've kind of forgotten him for it now, but the sight of Richard Sherman eating turkey, and it was Candlestick, wasn't it, at the time, I think, rather than Levi's. That's been erased from the memory banks now, I think. It was sweet retribution, wasn't it?
All this, Simon, and I still don't consider them a rival. What's wrong with me?
they're not a storied rival, I would suggest. Though. No, they're definitely an original rival.
I suppose they are. I mean, we have another ding-dong with these guys after this weekend. You know, we go right back at them, and then I think we're going to lick them again, but that's for another day's discussion.
I think we will. And it's also worth mentioning, I think, obviously, we have our rivals, Dio, and we know who they are in our eyes as fans. But I think the Seahawks would probably label us as their number one rival. I think it's definitely more weighted that way. So going into their stadium with the 12th man and all that kind of malarkey up in Seattle and coming out victorious, you could argue that that could possibly mean more hostile to what's upcoming at Lincoln Financial on Sunday.
Oh, the Philly fans are lunatics. I mean,
they are.
They're borderline animals. Okay.
The whole city of Philadelphia is the worst city in the United States.
we travel. As someone who's never been to Atlanta, I take it we travel well. Though. We travel well. There'll be a lot of faithful in.
There will.
Is it still called? I don't know what the hell their stadium's called anymore. It's not called Lincoln
Financial Field. Yeah.
Is it still called that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've shown you how old I am. I've seen you play there at the Veterans Stadium.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's basically spray painted concrete. That's what
seen the fan march before the Seattle game?
The what?
That shows the fan march. There were thousands of 49ers fans marching towards the stadium together. That there's a video about it, and that was impressive, and that shows how good we are traveling.
Well, I mean, all you had to do was look in the stands towards halfway through the fourth quarter, and you could see it was just red and gold.
Yeah,
but Philly,
we travel better than any other team. I think we travel better than any other team.
But Philly is going to be different. Their fans always show up. You know,
they do.
They're not as fickle as ours. Ours will still sell tickets. Philly's don't. As a general rule, they do not sell their tickets.
Yeah.
And do you know what? I'm terrified of this game for one reason only. We're a really good first half team, but shit second half. They're a phenomenal second half team, and that's the bit that worries me.
to put them. I mean, the Bills put them behind. What was it? 20 points? 21 points or so? And so they came back from it. And that they came back from it.
So did Kansas City. They had them pegged 17-7 at halftime in this, and held Kansas City shut them out second half. And this is where I'm really hoping Shanahan doesn't give them an in. If we can accumulate a 3-score lead, I'm like thinking that's going to be easy. We may not even get that far ahead, but if we do, we have to really, really cut the head off that snake there and then. We can't give them a single in, otherwise they're going to beat us. Simple as that.
The Bills and Kansas City don't have the 49ers defense.
They do not. But Seattle walks through unchallenged for most of the third quarter. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I was like, what is going on here?
Still got a touchdown.
No, they didn't. The defense didn't concede a touchdown. I know what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, it used to be bend and not break, didn't it? Do you remember the old, but can we afford to do that? Because, you know, we've come up against a few teams recently that have got into, you know, second, third and goal. You can't do that against Philadelphia because they'll just push Jalen Hurts over from, they'll just keep
being
doing
honest,
that.
I think this is going to be one of them where if we win by a score or a field goal, we won't be surprised. And if we win by 3 scores, we wouldn't be surprised.
No, you know? No, absolutely.
There's really not much in the middle with this game.
Absolutely.
And the tush-push thing, I think I've got a solution on how to stop it. Make Trent Williams an eligible defensive player. Stick him in front of the nose tackle, in front of the centre, and say, go on then.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, go on then.
Well, I mean, the bookmakers in America would agree with us. We opened 2.5-point favourites, so, you know, not many people go into a team away from home who are 10-1 and be favourites. And I think I touched on it a couple of weeks ago. I think the main difference between us and Philadelphia is that Philadelphia are keeping teams. We talk about us keeping teams interested, but crikey, they they don't blow anybody away. They keep everybody interested, and but they manage to get over the line, whereas we smoke people. Mm. And I've just got that feeling that, you know, I started listening to Fred Warner's podcast a couple of weeks ago, and he's a very, very, very articulate, intelligent gentleman off the field, and it's a good listen.
The Fred Warner one?
The Fred Warner, Warner House it's called.
I've not listened to that yet.
It's him and his partner, but it's fantastic. It gives you real insight from a player's perspective. However, he's got fire in his belly this week, and you can feel it. And he's being very clever about it, because he's not jumping on the narrative that the Eagles won in the championship game because Brock Purdy went off injured. He's coming out and he's saying, no, they beat us fair and square. They deserved it. But you can just tell there is going to be hell to pay this week.
But there really is so much at stake in this game. I mean, we could theoretically beat them and still not get the top seed in the NFC.
Of course, And I, to be honest, I perfectly expect that to happen. That's what I expect to happen.
If it did happen, it could mean that we avoid them until the NFC championship came.
Yeah.
That would be sweet revenge. If we were to beat them on Sunday, that wouldn't be revenge for me. It's not a championship game.
The problem is,
in a championship game, that's revenge. But if they do lose, they may lose another one, and then all bets are off. You know, I mean, the advantage is enormous if you become the top seed, a week off and home advantage throughout.
Yeah,
long distance flights, nothing. Yeah.
The problem I see is we can't get the number of one seed alone. We need help for it.
Yeah, no doubt.
And we have to do our homework. We have to win against the Eagles. But then comes the tricky part. We have to cheer for Dallas, Dallas to beat them, so we can become number one seed. Because when we and Dallas have the same score at the end, we get the number one seed because Dallas lost to us.
Screw that. I don't want number one seed that badly that I'd have to root for Dallas.
Yeah, honestly, I would prefer Philly to beat the Cowboys. There's possibly no chance for us to get the number one seed, only if Philly is stumbling over one of the worst teams in the league, like Dallas did against Arizona, and maybe Philly does too, because they still face Arizona. But that's the only chance we have to get the number one seed. So that's why one off topic. I am cheering for Dallas on Sunday for the only reason, for our own team, it's more important that Seattle loses, because Dallas lost a direct comparison against us.
Yeah,
Seattle still can win the direct comparison against us. So for me, it's more important that Seattle loses on Sunday than Dallas.
Guess who Philly has got after the Cowboys?
After the Cowboys, must be Arizona also.
They've got Seattle.
Seattle, okay.
Yeah.
So Seattle could do us a double favor.
Do they have Arizona and Seattle in the last three games? Okay.
And the Giants.
Could you imagine the irony of that? Seattle fans would hate it, wouldn't they?
They beat
Philly for us, and they beat Dallas.
Yeah, but maybe they would do it. Yeah, maybe Seattle would do it just to not face us in the wild card.
That's true. There's connotations. There is definitely those connotations.
They still have playoff ambitions of their own, though, so they're not going out there to mess about.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And we are still coming back to Dallas. Dallas haven't won against a plus 500 team so far, and Seattle still is a plus 500 team.
True, but you know what, Michael? We used to say that when people accused us of having an easy schedule, and for this I kind of sympathize with them a little bit. You can only beat what's in front of you, you know, and they'll find out eventually when they play somebody who's above 0.5, but for now, you know, when you factor in that the difference between a top team and a team that's right near the bottom is very marginal any given Sunday and all that bullshit. Anyone can beat anyone, you know. I don't know, man. I don't know.
It's a strange one, isn't it? It really, it really is.
It is, but there's so much that hangs on Sunday's game. It'll decide so many little things, and it could open up things because Seattle would still fancy a wild card opportunity. You know?
Yeah, 100%.
And they may well get it because how many games? I think they're 2 games behind us now.
Seattle? Yeah. Seattle is 2 games behind us.
Yeah, so if
they are 6-5, we are 8-3.
Yeah, we lose to Philly and they beat Dallas, bam. You know?
Yeah.
So they're playing, you know, they're not there to go through the motions.
And then the game after is Seattle, isn't it?
If Seattle wins against Dallas, that only helps Philadelphia. If Dallas wins against Seattle, it helps us.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I mean,
absolutely.
That one could go either way. I actually think Seattle will beat them, if I'm being truthful. I can see the Hawks beating Dallas.
Yeah, I can. 100%. There's a lot of teams that kind of look at them when they're not playing us, they look fantastic, and then they come up against us and look.
I mean, but then after that time, and we went on Skid Row for 3 weeks. I think that's the difference between us not getting the top seed, was giving up those 3 games.
And that's kind of where I am with the season, is that on Sunday it's going to be that close. The result doesn't really worry me that much. It's injuries. As long as we can come out of that game healthy, whichever way it goes, we're in good shape.
Well, they're definitely going to go after Purdy's arm again and hurt him.
Hassan Reddick has told them.
They're going to take him out.
I can see a lot of tight end help on passing downs
on that
offensive line.
I agree. I think we're going to see less of Kittle as a receiver and more of him as an extra blocker for Brock Purdy.
Yeah,
which is going to cause mayhem because you've got Ayuk, you've got Debo Samuel, you've got Christian McCaffrey, you've got Juice, you have so many loaded weapons coming out of that backfield.
On that, there's one name that you didn't mention there, and for me, on Thursday night, he made the play that made the biggest difference in the entire game. Juwan Jennings.
Oh, yeah.
3rd and 7. Caught the ball 3 yards behind. 4 Seahawks on his back. How the F did he make a first down? What a play. Stunning.
That was an astonishing play, wasn't it? I mean,
what a play.
How did that happen?
What I find funny is Purdy broke some of the rookie records Joe Montana had with the 49ers, or the early season's records that Joe Montana had with the 49ers. And now Ayuk broke one of the early season records of Jerry Rice with the first down, that of his 45 catches he had, 40 were first downs or touchdowns.
Yeah.
And I find it funny that those two break records of Jerry Rice and Joe Montana. And we all know how that ended.
Yeah. That is a bonkers stat, though. 40% of his throws are either a first down or a touchdown.
40 out of 45.
Yeah.
Mad.
I mean, look, Brandon Ayuk, for me, at the moment, I've never seen him this season catch a ball in traffic. He's always wide open. He's an elite route runner,
He is an elite route runner, no doubt. I would like to see Juice get a little bit more of the ball, but there's only so much to go around, isn't there? You know?
Yeah. The thing is, though, Juice will be a check down, or he'll be, you know, a third or fourth option. If one and two are always open, then you go with the guys, don't you? You put the ball in the hands of the playmakers. Not that Juice isn't fun, but Sunday is going to be riveting. It's going to be nerve wracking. It's going to be a Niners victory. I feel
Niners victory. I like it. By how many, though, Si? Come on.
I think 10 points.
Yeah.
I think 2 scores.
Fair enough.
I think 10 points. I wouldn't surprise it if it was 30 to 20, something like that. Philadelphia do come back. And it wouldn't surprise me if we went out to a big lead and then, you know, we're sort of 24-3 up and then Philly came back and we killed it off. You know, I just think that if they play like they have been doing Philadelphia, I think we'll be the team that's the one step too many for them to be able to come back from, just because of how good our defence is.
I agree with you. I think there's only so long you can keep winning games by the odd score here and there. You know, eventually Absolutely. You're going to come unstuck.
Of course you are.
Especially if you're a good team. You know.
Let's not forget. The Eagles lost against the Jets.
That seemed like a long time ago.
It is a long time ago. But yeah, anything else to add, guys? We haven't unfortunately got any pick six stats so far yet for this week. So
Michael,
that will have
Michael,
to catch
we didn't
up with
get
that.
Your score prediction, my friend.
Oh, sorry, Michael. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Niners win 21-17.
Yeah, I'm going with the two score as well. I think we'll score more points than that, though.
But I have an off topic before you come to the.
Yeah, go ahead.
Or
mate.
Not really off topic, but a question to you too.
Of course, go ahead.
Sure.
Zach Ertz is now a free agent. We don't have a good tight end besides Kittle, who is good in passing, in the passing game. Should we try to get him on our practice squad?
On the practice squad, there's nothing to lose, really, is there? You know.
He's an old head. He'd bring experience and you know, he's a wealth of knowledge, but he's very, very old now. And, you know, if Arizona don't want him, then he can't be that good anymore. I haven't seen enough of him recently to... I think he's been a very much a bit part player, hasn't he, for Arizona? I mean, yeah, we could get him in on the practice squad, like you say, Michael. I don't see that being a problem, just to have his experience around the place. But, you know, we've got Ross Dwelly and Charlie Warner. Charlie Warner, I haven't seen catch a pass, I don't think. Ross Dwelly's caught some passes in the past, but, yeah, it may be maybe something they look at. Maybe something they look at, but not before this game, that's for sure.
Good shout, though, Michael.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Anything else, guys?
Nothing from me, mate. Looking forward to Sunday, though.
I'm done.
Well, I think that's it. This is the calm before the storm, isn't it? Okay. Yeah. Well, if you've nothing else to add, we'll wrap that up. So I've been your host, Simon Holdsworth, and on behalf of Deepak Gohill and Michael Wandy, this has been the Frequency 49 show. Let's murder those Eagles on Sunday.
Oh.
And the outro isn't playing. Go on, Dee.
That'll do.